Kia ora, tēnā koutou, nō mai, haere mai. Hello everyone, welcome to the Walk in the Shadowlands podcast. Join me as we take a walk into the realms of the unexplained, of the paranormal, of things that go bump in the night and haunt your dreams.
Your hosts,
I'm Marianne. Thanks so much for joining me today, tonight, whatever time it is, wherever you live in this beautiful world of ours. Sit back and relax. Let me be your guide as we walk into the Shadowlands together and see what awaits us there. Hi everyone. This episode's a very short one, much shorter than most I put out. It's also my final guest interview for our Walk in the Shadowlands podcast before I finish the podcast and stop producing episodes. Although, don't worry, I do have a few more up my sleeve, but none of them are interviews with guests. So it's also a bit sad for me. My guest had to finish our conversation early due to a family commitment. Events in my life here in Australia have prevented me from being able to reconnect with him and go into other areas that I also wanted to share with you all. My guest is a very extraordinary man, and once you hear the information about his achievements in life, you'll see that he has had a very diverse and most interesting journey. This is an area that I don't know that he's talked about much on air before, and certainly it's very different to my conversation with him when I appeared as a guest on his podcast. Today, we delve into the extraordinary experiences of Patrick Bass, a man gifted in so many different areas. Patrick shares his profound journey from ministry to confronting dark spiritual forces. In this deeply personal conversation, he reveals the challenges of working with entities, the delicate nature of healing, and the reality of possession. This episode touches on themes of spiritual warfare and the choices people make when faced with otherworldly influences. You won't want to miss Patrick's compelling accounts and wisdom gained through a lifetime of walking the line between the spiritual and physical world. As always, are you willing to walk into this part of the Shadowlands and see what awaits us there? Then let's begin. Patrick Bass brings a remarkably diverse background to the table. Calling it diverse is really a bit of an understatement. With over 28 years of experience as a leading cybersecurity expert and investigator, Patrick has earned more than 30 professional and technical certifications, alongside advanced degrees in business and computer science. As the former chief cybersecurity officer of one of the world's most renowned philanthropists and tech moguls, Patrick offers a truly unique perspective on business, information security, and the evolving landscape of the internet. His deep knowledge and hands-on experience allow him to navigate the complexities of cybersecurity while providing valuable insights at the intersection of technology and business strategy. Patrick's storied career includes roles as a firefighter, paramedic, police officer, private investigator, bounty hunter, stand-up comedian, business owner, and even ordained minister. While some may see this as unsettled, Patrick views it as the path of an explorer, constantly seeking new challenges and opportunities to grow. One thing has remained constant: Patrick's connection to media. Patrick's first career in radio and television forged a lifelong bond with broadcasting, a passion he's carried with him through every stage of his professional journey. Even while exploring other fields, his root in media remains strong, culminating in Insight Radio, a podcast that reached the top 5% of the world's most listened to shows, and then COVID happened. The pandemic upended the world, disrupting how we connect and communicate, including Patrick's relationship with his audience. Returning to both podcasting and terrestrial airways with renewed vigour, The Patrick Bass Show launched in May 2024 and has already secured a place in the top 10% of podcasts worldwide, with its audience continuing to grow every day. I'd like to welcome my guest, Patrick Bass. Hi, everybody. This is my very last interview for our Walking the Shadowlands podcast, and I'm very thrilled today to have as my special guest, Patrick. I was on Patrick's podcast several weeks ago. By the time you hear this, it will probably be 6 to 8 weeks ago. And we had a really great conversation. I just felt that Patrick had so much to offer you listeners that I wanted to talk to him about his work and what got him into podcasting as well. Patrick, thank you so much for agreeing to join us today. It's really awesome to have you back again.
Thank you so much, Marianne. It's delightful to chat with you again, and thank you for having me. Wow, what an honor to be your final guest. I'm saddened and humbled and excited all at the same time.
Yeah, it feels that way for me too. It's been a journey, and I've really loved my podcast, and it's not like we've run out of people to talk to or subjects to cover. It's just the financial issues. But that's okay. Things happen for a reason, and I'm so glad you're here. Now, when we talked off the air, not during our interview, you mentioned that you were a demonologist. Is that correct?
That is correct. And the reason I didn't mention it on the air is because that was your episode. And I don't ever want to steal the thunder from my guest, but having had the opportunity to chat with you briefly at the conclusion of the show, I did want to relate it to you. No expectations or particular reason in mind, just something I wanted to share. And that's what led to this now.
Partly what led to this also because you've had so many paranormal experiences, couple of which you shared with me, that I think my listeners would find absolutely fascinating. So maybe we could start at the beginning, Patrick, and maybe you could tell us what led you into, let's talk about demonology first because it's all combined. So what led you into this field to begin with?
I'd have to say that I've always been somewhat, to a much greater degree than average people, in tune with the spiritual world. I can remember even as a child that I was aware of something, let's say, in the ether. But for me, it seemed absolutely normal because I didn't know any different. I didn't discern a difference between what I had experienced and what others had identified as more normal until later in life. And in my earlier time as a teenager, I did all the typical rebellious teenager kind of stuff. And it was at that point that I dabbled as a practitioner of the occult. I didn't know why I was drawn to that, but it was something that I played around with. And in fact, it was something that was quite dangerous for me to do, as I would later learn. But that episode or those experiences created a lot of problems for me in that it opened me up. I believe it opened me up in a much greater capacity than I had ever known before to the spiritual world, particularly to the demonic world, which is an area where I have a very strong leaning and understanding of. And that came to a fruition later in life when I became an ordained Christian minister and went to seminary. By the way, I don't still claim those titles, but it is part of my background story.
Can you perhaps tell us some of the experiences that you had that led you as a result of your dabbling in the occult areas? Are you able to talk about it?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. For me, what happened is I nearly became possessed myself. So I believe that there's multiple levels of what I call oppression, which will ultimately and many times lead to possession. Oppression means I'm bothered by spirits or trying to influence me, or my actions interfere with my thoughts, cause physical discomforts, things like that. And then possession is the actual indwelling of one or more, in this case, demonic spirits. That never happened to me, but I was certainly oppressed for quite a long time. And it was something that I was not able to overcome by myself. I had, as I mentioned, a religious experience later in life that the man who would become my mentor and trainer in the faith helped rid me of that.
How did its oppression effects work on you? Did it make things difficult in your life, or was it like more supernatural things?
There were some supernatural experiences that I'll be happy to share. In many respects, it was just how it colored everything that I looked at. I was very angry, very mean, bitter, and angry. It colored everything that I saw with a negative connotation. Mm-hmm. And then there were several significant, more mainline paranormal experiences where I would see, I guess the best way to describe them is they looked like little imps.
Mm-hmm.
And my belief is they were demonic entities that had been sent to monitor me or to keep their eye on me. I believe that there's, as with angels, there are hierarchies of demons. And these lower level imps were there basically to report on me and to cause problems for me, which is something they did quite well.
Do you see them as like little shadow beings?
Sometimes I did, especially if they were in my peripheral vision. But for me, and this is one of the things that I have experienced, is I can see them very plainly, just as easily as I can see you, both angelic beings and demonic beings, which would tend to make sense because in the belief system, demons are fallen angels. Mm-hmm. They're all the same type of non-corporeal being. Mm-hmm. So I've seen both frequently and many throughout my life.
The reason I asked if you saw them as shadows is I recall having an experience when I was, let's see, I probably would have been about 19, 20 maybe. And I was at a friend's place and this family was dealing with some very nasty, very human stuff. So the mother was a single mum with two daughters and they had these, I call them shadow people. They were really tiny. They fit the description of the imps. I was sitting in their lounge and I saw this shadow move across the wall. And then I turned and looked at it. And when I realized I could see it, it ran right across the room, around the room, and another one joined. It was very fast, and it was like it was two-dimensional. It was like it would follow the curves of the wall, like it was hugging the wall, and follow the door frame and stuff. And the woman and her children were absolutely terrified. They were terrified by these creatures that were tormenting them in their house. They didn't scare me. I was just like amazed that I could actually see them. But I saw them as very black shadow people.
See, right now I'm having an experience where I feel very strongly tied to you through that story. I don't know if you can feel anything, but I have the sense where I'm almost not even sitting in my chair anymore. I feel like I'm floating. And that is a perception that I have that often comes before some greater experience, but I feel very certain that those were demonic beings.
Given what the family was dealing with, I will say that I have a little bit of a different understanding of demonic. I don't see it from the religious perspective. I see it as being beings from a different dimension whose energies are vastly different to ours, but they are real nonetheless, whatever terminology you choose to give them. But yeah, given what that family was dealing with, that doesn't surprise me in the least.
Yeah, and the semantics of it all are somewhat immaterial because we relate to these things in a way that makes the most sense to our human understanding.
Correct.
So in your vernacular, they're interdimensional beings. In my understanding, that may also be true, but I perceive them as flat-out demon entities.
Yes, yeah. And I totally understand that. I just wanted you to know where I was coming from. I have full respect and appreciate your viewpoint. And there would be so many more people who would agree with you. There's an old saying, I forget exactly how it goes, but there's many paths to the top of the mountains. We take different paths, but it's the same thing ultimately.
Yeah. One of the more profound experiences that I had happened after I left the ministry. Oddly enough, in the ministry, that's where I honed my abilities, working under this other man that I mentioned was my mentor, who was a very well-known prophet type individual and who was also very gifted in supernatural things, dealing with demons and things like this. And having worked under his tutelage, my natural abilities or gifts or whatever you want to call them were greatly increased. And once I left the ministry, those gifts did not leave me. And in fact, in some ways, they became even more profound because I wasn't limited by the dogma of my religion.
Right.
And when I met my wife, whom I married now almost 11 years ago, I was very hesitant to share this with her because, frankly, I didn't want to scare her off. But I also felt like I had to be genuine, and I wanted her to know all of me. And there were a number of occurrences that happened that I believe God, in this case, allowed me to experience. And she was witness to it, I think, as a testimony to the fact that I'm not crazy. So she was also able to independently see these things for herself, so that when I'm able to talk to her about it now, she knows exactly what I'm talking about. She knows that this is real.
Mm.
One of those experiences, we were in nearby Seattle, Washington. And this was right after shortly after we'd been married. And we were living there and we were in a grocery store. And as we walked past this man, and by the way, there's a lot of possessed people in that part of the country. I don't know why. I'm not making a judgment. I'm just saying there's a lot of them there. But as we were, I'll never forget, we were back near the dairy. And this man walked past me. And as he walked past me, there was nothing striking about him, just an ordinary fellow. But something about him caught my eye. And as I looked up at him, his entire face physically distorted into this horrible demonic form. And he let out the most inhumane girdle sound and then immediately reverted back to his human nature. And I looked at my wife and she goes, yeah, I saw it. And he looked surprised as if he didn't know what happened. And in fact, I don't think he did. That was one. Another one, shortly thereafter, we were in a restaurant and I'm sitting there minding my own business. I don't believe we had even ordered yet. And this woman walks up to me, someone I had never met nor seen before, walks up to me and she said something that was really odd. She called me by a term I had never claimed for myself. She said, I know what you are, priest.
Interesting.
And I looked at her and I said, I know what you are too, witch. And you would have thought that I had hit her upside the head with a 2x4. And she turned around and walked away. That was the encounter. To this day, I often think about it. And again, that was a title I had never claimed for myself. But it must have been something that was self-evident in the spiritual realm that she recognized. And our spirits clashed horribly in that realm. And I wasn't saying that to be mean or to attack her any more than I think she was trying to be mean or attack me. We just recognized each other for what we perceived the other to be.
How did that leave you feeling?
At the time, it left me confused and somewhat sad for her because I believed that she was either possessed or very severely oppressed.
Mm.
And I don't feel like she was in full control of her actions at that time.
Mm.
But that's just the tip of the iceberg, Marianne. There's so many even more profound things. My life, in fact, has been a roller coaster of very strange paranormal experiences. I remember one time we were in South Texas and we went to this old hospital. It had been converted to a hotel. And when I walked in, I became physically ill and I could hear the moaning and wailing of countless souls. And I had never had any kind of encounter like that before. And it was later that I learned that had been a very cruel and horrible insane asylum.
Wow. I knew as soon as you said hospital, I knew it was going to be something.
I just don't know if there were actual entities or in there, or if there was just like some residual energy, but it was a very horrible place and it made me physically nauseous.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not a good feeling. I've had places that have done that to me too. And when you're spiritually sensed, it doesn't matter what perspective you come from, you do feel it like that.
Yeah.
And it can make you very physically ill. How did you get into the demonology training and how long did you train for?
About 3 years.
That's quite a lot.
And it wasn't a training program per se, other than I worked alongside and as the assistant to my mentor.
Through him. The first time you ever, I guess, did an exorcism for a person, how was that for you? What was that experience like?
It was emotionally and mentally and physically draining. I had the sense that, you know, all the movies that have been created and everything like that, it was totally unlike that. It was nothing like that. It was something that lasted only a few minutes. And it, within that few minutes, I felt like I had expended hours and hours of physical and mental energy. Mm. One thing I had never felt, though, was fear.
Oh, really?
These beings, just as recently as a couple of weeks ago, they tested me here in my own home. And it's something where, you know, I think I'll have to have this lifelong vigilance. Mm. But the one thing I've never felt, except for one time, and I'll tell you about that, was fear. Mm. And let me relate this story to you. At this time, I was still a preacher, a minister, and it was Easter Sunday. It was Saturday before Easter Sunday. And the family I had, the person I was married to at that time, she and I were not meant to be together. But nevertheless, that was the situation we found ourselves in. And I prepared that night my notes for Sunday's Easter service. And when that Sunday came, I stood in front of the congregation preaching my message. And I remember feeling very prideful because this was a church that I had started with very little assistance from any other religious organization. And it was doing quite well. Mm-hmm. And I became very prideful. And in my belief, especially at that time, there were, as I said, hierarchies of demons, and each geographic area had a prince and various underlings. And I openly challenged the prince of that city. And I told him, I said, I don't yet know your name, but my name is Patrick Bass, and I'm coming for you. That night, I began to have an incredible headache. One like I had, it made a migraine look insignificant. Yeah. By the next day, I was in the hospital because my brain was hemorrhaging. Uh-huh. And there are 6 months of my life that to this day, I don't remember.
Wow.
And I believe it was my pride that allowed that entity to attack me and affect me physically. That was the only time I had ever been afraid and the only time I had ever tried to do anything under my own authority and name.
Right. That was a big learning for you, for sure. So basically, you had a stroke.
It was in my right occipital lobe, which is near the head on the lower part of the brain. And it was, I guess, technically, yes, that is technically a stroke or a hemorrhagic stroke, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. It should have made me blind on the left side of each of my eyes. Mm-hmm. It should have left me with several neural deficits. I don't have any.
Yeah. Wow. The nurse in me is just ticking over in my mind.
Yeah.
Okay. If he had a stroke there, you should probably have this and probably have that. And yeah, you're very lucky indeed. And you don't remember that whole 6 month period?
I remember being told about it now, but there are many parts of my memory that I don't have direct memories of. I remember now, I was told after the fact, this is what happened at the time. That was from the trauma of the brain injury.
Oh, of course. And,
yeah.
And it would take a while for that to heal. You don't have any lasting effects from it at all that I can see.
No, and that was probably well over 20 years ago, probably close to 25 years ago now.
Wow, that must have been an absolute wake-up call for you.
Yeah, it really was. And it helped me to understand that this is not a game, that this is not something that should be toyed with, and that the things that happen in the spiritual realm can and sometimes do have an impact on our physical world.
No, absolutely, 100%. They do, and they can. Oh, that's so interesting. Now, when you worked as a demonologist, were there specific signs that you would look for if testing if a person was possessed?
That's an interesting question because I know the Hollywood spin would indicate that there are, but for me, it was really how I felt about what it was that was happening. Mm-hmm. I would rely on the spirit that guides me to inform me as to what was happening and what I should do. Because to be honest, there are many times where I have encountered people who I knew were either possessed or oppressed, and I did not act to relieve them of that situation because it was either something that they had sought out and wanted, or it was something I was specifically told not to do.
It's very interesting. Now, that does bring I remember hearing an interview on the Art Bell show with Father Malachi Martin. Have you heard of him?
I have not.
He was a Catholic priest who was a Vatican exorcist, I believe.
Oh, wow.
And he was talking about people who were perfectly possessed. And these were people who had wanted this and had accepted it.
Yeah. Also, based on my training and what I believe that the Bible is authoritative word of God, there's a verse in there that speaks about a spirit who inhabits a man and he's cast out. And it says he goes to a dry place and he walks around for a period of time. And then he returns to that man and finds it basically that there's no strong man guarding the house.
Yeah.
And so he goes and finds it seven more vile than himself. And together they all re-enter that person who it says is worse off than when he first started. So to me, unless I'm feeling specifically directed, I won't work to have that entity removed because I don't want to create a situation where ultimately they're worse off.
Right. And sometimes it's not your call to do that, is it?
It's never been my call. And that's what I believe.
What I meant by that was that sometimes people are experiencing these things as a learning tool for them that they may use later in their lives.
It's possible. That's what happened to me, if you think about it. Mm. One thing that I've learned is that I'm nobody's judge. And I'm not the arbiter of justice either. Mm. I view myself very much as a vessel that's used for a particular purpose. And that is oftentimes very horrible and heavy burden.
Mm.
I'm not certain that I would have chosen it for myself. I'm not feeling sorry for myself. It's just how I was built and what I believe what my purpose in life is in part anyway. And so, you know, this is who and what I am.
I totally get that because it's the same for me in my journey. You know, I'm doing what I came here to do, what I'm going to do. So I totally understand where you're coming from. Your feelings aside, are there other ways that you can tell if a person is possessed? Are there physical things that you could notice? Or do most of these who are possessed just look like the average everyday person?
Many of them, you would, through casual observation, not discern it.
Right.
Sometimes I can see it in the spirit.
Yeah.
Sometimes the person has a strong aversion to anything that is specifically related to Jesus Christ. Interestingly enough, the demons know fully who he is, and that's the one name I believe that they have to submit to, and that's the authority under by which I operate.
Interesting. I know that like the Hollywood version is never what reality is, obviously, although they do sometimes have grains of truth in what they feed, not a lot. Mostly it's just drama. But how do you find that when you come across these possessed people, you had one that recognized you, do they generally recognize what you are? And have they ever said stuff to you that nobody else would know?
In one case, there was a demon entity who I had previously encountered.
Right, and he remembered you.
Yes, and his name was Murder. That was the name of the demon. And I had previously encountered him. And this entity was, and again, I don't know if it's a single entity or maybe many of them have the same name or I don't know. But he revealed his name to me again. And it was one that I had previously known. And I did cast him out. And the way it's very anticlimactic, really. I use anointing oil, which is a symbol of the Holy Spirit in my belief. I lay hands on them and I command the demon directly to leave.
And they do?
Yes.
How many people in your career as an exorcist do you feel have been genuinely possessed?
The ones that I've encountered, maybe as many as 20 or 25.
That's a fair number, isn't it?
Quite a lot.
How do you discern between people who may have a psychiatric illness and someone who's genuinely dealing with supernatural phenomena?
That's a good point. And one of the things that I realized is those two things do not necessarily have to be mutually exclusive.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes the psychiatric problems are brought on by the entity, but it's also possible to have problems with an entity or mental problems that are totally unrelated. I think that's where the training that I had comes into play, understanding human nature, understanding and interpreting what I'm feeling in the spirit is also very important. Because again, I don't act on my own volition. I'm acting under divine inspiration, my belief.
I totally understand that. What made you finally stop working in this area?
Oh, I still do.
Oh, you still do?
Yeah, quite active, in fact. I just don't do it under the banner of being a minister.
Oh, okay. Right.
It's something that I'm, some may say gifted, others may say plagued with, but it's something that I still do as I'm so led.
Mm. And do you find that, do these people approach you, or how does that happen?
There have been times in the past where I've made connections with local groups that do paranormal investigations and things like that. And on some rare occasion, they may request my help. More often than not, our paths just seem to cross.
Right.
It's like a divine appointment, if you will.
Yeah, I totally get that. Been in the right place at the right time. Let's go to the paranormal groups. When they've called you for assistance, is it because the members are having issues, or is it because of something that they've come across in whatever place they're investigating?
In my dealing with only a specific couple of groups, they are quite willing to work and deal with entities they perceive to be not demonic.
Mm.
The moment they are informed or perceive it to be something of the demonic nature, truly demonic, mm. they don't want to mess with it, and rightfully so. And so they'll call for someone who's particularly gifted in that area.
I totally understand that. Have you found that any of the members of these groups have had any of these more negative beings follow them home?
That has happened in the past. They have to take precautions. And again, it's not a game. And then still in some other cases, I had perceived that two individuals in particular were themselves possessed either previously or had become so at that time. And in those cases, I felt like it was something that they quite enjoyed or welcomed.
Yeah, I have a family situation like that. I have a niece who has an attachment. I could easily remove an attachment, no worries. But she likes having this attachment. He encourages her drinking. She's an alcoholic. And she's just gotten so used to having him around, encouraging her drinking, that she just doesn't want to get rid of him.
It's sad. And
it's very sad.
Probably more common than we might realize.
I remember when she first started talking about this chap and how she was seeing him out the corner of her eyes, and I warned her, but she can't, you can't help
people.
How
would she describe him? Because I'm really getting the sense he's like a hipster kind of looking fellow. That's something that I'm not able to normally feel, but in this case, I am.
Yeah, she's in New Zealand, and I tried really hard to help her, and I could very easily get rid of that attachment. But she wants him there, and if somebody wants him there, you can't do anything.
No, and I think it would potentially be damaging until she's willing to accept it.
That's so sad. It's just caused so much damage in that family and her little babies. And there's just nothing you can do. Nothing you can do. That's the hardest. Do you find, Patrick, that that's one of the hardest things to deal with, when you know you can help people, but unless they want the help, you can't do anything?
Yeah, that is difficult. One of the things that I feel like my gift is limited by is I've never, because there's a part of it I haven't yet shared with you, in that I've also have been in several instances gifted with healing.
Oh, really?
Others. But I've never been able to, or at least have been allowed to, I should say, use that for my own benefit.
But this is the thing, Patrick. Our gifts are not for us. They're given to help other people.
Yeah. But I have seen people who, there was a person who was at the heart hospital and was expected to die. And we went there to basically give them a spiritual send off. And at that moment, I was felt like I needed to pray for healing. And I did. And 2 days later, they walked out of that hospital. I had called them 3 or 4 days after because I was wondering when the funeral might be. And I had been told that they left, they discharged, they were well.
That's awesome. Have you found, Patrick, in the past 3, 4, maybe even 5 years that there's been a division forming, whereas those who are on a spiritual path, those who are finding their way, are becoming more, and those who are more of a negative path are becoming more and more negative? Have you found that?
I think in general, there's just been a marked decline in civility and kindness and empathy and sympathy and compassion.
Yeah.
The world has, it feels more cruel than it ever has. Yeah. And it, in the spiritual realm, I feel like there's a tremendous upheaval and conflict, and I feel like things are going to quickly come to a head. Quickly is a subjective term. It could be tomorrow. It could be near the end of my lifetime. I don't know when.
I'm 100% with you on that. I see it from a different angle, but I 100% agree. And the feeling of it building is quite, you probably felt that sense of urgency building, is quite palpable for some of us who are aware of things that are coming and are going to happen. But, and as the saying goes, it's always darkest before dawn, and it's part of the process of what this planet and what humanity is going through at the moment.
I think it is. And I think for the most part, there have been times in human history where things seemed bleak. I think this is one of those times, but I also think it's unique in that there really is something happening that transcends my ability to describe it, frankly, and is probably unprecedented in our human journey. It's hard for me to put words in because I don't want to give breath to something that is false. So I'm carefully choosing my words, but it just feels very uneasy. And that's putting it mildly.
When COVID first came out, I did a special little podcast episode. It's only 20 minutes long. It's called The End Game.
Mm.
And in it, I talk about, I couch things very carefully about how I say it. But I talk about my knowing of things that are happening and why they are happening. And this is all part and parcel of it. It's just part and parcel. And between you and me, yeah, it's building up really fast and really strong. And those who currently control this reality for their own benefit are doing all they can to stay in power.
And that's the great illusion. They think that they're in control of this. But it's all trickery. There's a predetermined conclusion to all of this. What that might be yet, I don't fully know. But those that are truly in power know what that is, and they're working actively to that end. And those who think they're in power think that they'll be able to control it and have some part of it. And I don't think they will.
They won't. No, they won't. It's very interesting times that we're living in, Patrick. And I believe that in both of our lifetimes, we'll see the end of this.
That would be quite something to behold.
Yeah.
In a way, I'm anxiously awaiting it.
As we wrap up, I want to extend a heartfelt thank you to Patrick Bass for joining us and sharing his extraordinary experiences. His insight has certainly given us plenty to think about as we continue to explore the deeper realms of the unknown. Because our conversation finished early, Patrick never got the opportunity to share his social media links with you all. Here they are. Patrick's website is pwbass.com. His podcast is called The Patrick Bass Show and is available from most podcasting apps. He is on most social media platforms, which are all linked from his website, pwbass.com, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, X, etc. Don't worry if you miss those links. If you visit the podcast website, www.walkingtheshadowlands.com, and check out this episode's page, all the links to his social media outlets and website will be there. And while this marks the end of my guest interviews, we're not quite finished yet. I've got a couple of spooky episodes lined up just in time for Halloween and before we close the podcast, so stay tuned for those. Thank you all for listening, and as always, stay curious, stay open, and keep exploring. This is Marianne bidding you farewell from the Shadowlands. Thanks for listening to this episode. Ka kite.